opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart with host Dr. Gloria Horsley, marriage and family therapist, author, and international expert in the area of grief and loss. Tune in and hear bereaved parents and siblings share their stories of loss, hope, and renewal. You will learn what they have done to cope, how they have established a new normal in their lives, and how they have gone on to do fantastic things. Dr. Gloria dedicates this show to her deceased son, Scott, and to all of the parents and other family members who have lost loved ones before their time. And now, with Healing the Grieving Heart, here's your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley.
Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley. Healing the Grieving Heart is dedicated to those who are struggling through their days without the presence of that special child. Our topic today is Suicide Changes Hearts. I am a bereaved parent and a psychotherapist. However, I don't claim to be an expert on the topic of suicide. It has long been my belief that it matters not whether a child dies of a long-term illness, sudden accident, murder, overdose, or by their own hand in a bout of depression or mental confusion. We will miss them and hold them in our hearts endlessly and forever. For whatever reason or action, our children have left our lives and will never return. As parents and siblings, we all ask ourselves, why did this have to happen? Why must we suffer so? What could we have done to have made it different? These are universal questions. No matter the cause or events surrounding our child's death, the fact is they are gone and we are left. How we cope is highly individual and is impacted by events surrounding the death. When I was picking my topics for the shows, I decided to dedicate an entire show to suicide. My colleagues asked me, if death by suicide is simply another way that a child dies, why have a show specifically dedicated to the topic? I replied, because my friends who have lost children to suicide tell me that they have suffered cruel words, negative attitudes, and insensitive behaviors that have hurt, wounded their hearts, and delayed their healing. Today's show is not about suicide prevention. It's about heart block prevention. While suicide prevention has a legitimate place in our society, I'm sure that any person who has had a child take their own life has been inundated with prevention. In retrospect, they are fully aware of all the signs and symptoms that they missed. Our show today is about healing those that are left behind, remembering that with courage and faith, the heart will heal and love again. My guests and I are here to tell you that love will abound for you, your child, and the world. You will again enjoy the sunrise, a memory, a smell, and the tinkle of a child's laughter. Healing the grieving heart is about nourishing the heart and removing the blocks that slow the miracle of renewal. Please join our show today, Suicide Changes Hearts, by calling our toll-free number 1-866-369-3742 with questions or comments regarding the losses in your life, or email me at gchorsley@aol.com. Today, I'm very honored to have as my special guest Joyce Harvey, registered nurse, author of I'm Fine, I'm with the Angels, a children's book of dying and survival of the spirit or soul. Joyce is a member of the Screen Actors Guild and the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. Joyce's only child, Jennifer, died by suicide in 1995 while serving in the Marines. Good morning, Joyce, and welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart.
Good morning, Gloria. Thank you for having me on the show.
I so appreciate your willingness to come in and share with our listeners this most important topic of coping with a death through suicide. Could you tell us something about Jennifer, your daughter, and how she died?
I sure
can. And what she was doing at the time?
I sure can. Jennifer, as you mentioned, was my only child, and she joined the Marine Corps because she wanted to serve our country, and she's always very serious about life and service. And did very well in the Marine Corps. She was the honor graduate for her platoon. That's the highest honors you can get when you graduate from boot camp, and it's awarded for exceptional leadership and discipline and physical endurance and a team spirit, so to speak. And then she went on to graduate the top of her military occupational school. Her specialty was administration. So she did very, very well. She served the she was serving stateside in the States, and she absolutely loved the Corps until she had a change in command, and she had a new sergeant who began picking on her. And I think he was jealous of Jen. She was bright and beautiful and has had good leadership skills and was the honor graduate. And I think that that got under his skin. But Jennifer was also very sensitive. She was sensitive from the time she was born. And she didn't understand why the harder she worked to please the sergeant, the more he picked on her. And around the same time, she found out that her boyfriend, who had told her he was divorced, was in fact still married and planning to bring his wife and child to live with him on base. And they worked in the same office. So when she found that out, of course, she broke up with him, but he began stalking her and not allowing her to move on with her life. So between the harassment of the sergeant on a daily basis and the continued close working relationship with the ex-boyfriend in the same office, she began to slip into a deep depression and eventually took her own life.
How long had she been in the Marines when this?
A year and a half.
A year and a half. And were you aware of anything that was going on?
I was aware that she was struggling with a new supervisor. I didn't know how deep her depression was, but I was aware that she was going through some difficult times, and I was trying to work with her, helping her to locate a psychologist off base so that, you know, her conversations could be kept private, and I was working with her on that.
So that certainly would be an issue, that our conversations would need to be private, which is maybe some of the reason that people don't come forward when they're feeling...
Right. She said that anything she shared with the psychologist on base, her superiors could ask to see the records and could be privy to the conversations, which I don't think is fair. And so we helped her find somebody, a private practice that she could go to.
So she was stateside, which is a little different than those folks who have people in the military that are overseas.
Right, and there has been an increase in suicides in the military. In fact, the military suicide rate has increased about 21% from 79 to 96, and it continues to rise. It's the third leading cause of death in the military. And I think, you know, some of the young men and women that are taking their lives in Iraq, I personally consider those to be casualties of war as well. You know, we don't know what they have to do over there. We don't know what they're faced with, and it's a casualty of war.
So how did the military handle, how do they handle suicide?
I know that that after Jennifer's death, they did increase their suicide prevention classes, and I know the Army did put in a program, because there were rises of suicide in the Army as well, and they did put in a pretty in-depth suicide prevention program.
Now, how did she die? What method?
She shot herself.
Yeah, because I was thinking one of the things about the military is that they are carrying guns, and they do a spontaneous,
that's right,
at the moment kind of thing.
That's right.
Which really makes it difficult. How does the military handle that? In terms of the fact that they do carry guns, and do they, if they feel like somebody's depressed, do they put them on another duty, or?
Yes, they would if they had recognized that, yes.
But they didn't recognize that with her.
Evidently not. I know she was crying out for help, but no one was listening.
And how was she doing that?
She would ask to be transferred from that caustic environment. The supervisor was humiliating her, Jennifer was a very strong person inwardly, but she was also very sensitive. And so, you know, if he would humiliate her and she would cry, he'd make her sit at her desk in view of everyone and would not let her go to the ladies' room or clean up her makeup or anything. So he was really, really harassing her, and she had requested a transfer a number of times, went over his head requesting a transfer. His boss told him to lay off of her. She was a good Marine. Stop picking on her. But he didn't really enforce it, so that the harassment continued.
Now, what happens to, I don't know the military, I know they have very different rules than the rest of the world. What happens to someone who is in charge of her and that when this all happens? Did he get any censure or...
Well, that's a good question. I tried to find that out. They did do a JAG investigation and an NCIS, Naval Criminal Investigation. And I tried to find out exactly what happened. I didn't really get any good answers. I don't think a whole lot happened, quite frankly, in mm-hmm. terms of counseling these folks. Maybe just some counseling, but.
Now, how do you deal with your anger around that? How have you dealt with that? I assume you were angry around it.
Yeah, you know, the anger didn't come right away. I was able to keep the anger focused just on the few individuals and not against the entire military. I fortunately was able to separate out, you know, the behavior of a few versus, you know, the entire military. And I was very angry with the boyfriend and very angry with Jennifer's supervisor. But I was also very angry at myself. I took this loss very personally. I felt like initially, and I've worked past that, but initially I felt that Jennifer's suicide was my grade card for being a mother, and I had flunked motherhood. I took it very personally.
When we come back from break, let's start from there, and I'd also like to talk with our, you know, to our listeners about the stigma of suicide and things that were said to you. Mm-hmm. Or things that happened. Mm-hmm. We're coming up on break, and please stay tuned to hear more from bereaved parent Joyce Harvey. Our topic today is Suicide Changes Hearts. Please feel free to call in to our show. Our toll-free number is 1-866-369-3742, and you can email me at gchorsley@aol.com.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Are you happy with your health? Do you feel that conventional medicine doesn't work for you? Migrate yourself from everyday healthcare to the holistic health lifestyle by tuning into the Holistic Health Hotline with Raina Ganji, Thursdays at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time on Voice America Health and Wellness. It's the show that'll take you on a journey every week through the various modalities comprising the true holistic approach to health and wellness. Topics will range from reflexology and body balancing to menopause and male dysfunction. Issues will be covered from both Native American and global perspectives. You'll also learn more about how your body, mind, and spirit relate to our universal connection. So join us Thursdays at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for the Holistic Health Hotline with Raina Ganji, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
We all want to improve the environment, but not all of us are willing to make radical changes in our lifestyle to help. If you're one of the millions of people who want to change the world without changing your life, tune in to Voice America Health and Wellness every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time for The Lazy Environmentalist with Josh Dorfman. The Lazy Environmentalist is about easily and effortlessly greening our modern lifestyles without ever sacrificing style. Host Josh Dorfman will bring together designers, entrepreneurs, and visionaries who are rapidly making the modern green lifestyle a reality. So help your world and help yourself by listening to The Lazy Environmentalist with Josh Dorfman every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We now rejoin Dr. Gloria on Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffer the loss of a child.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria, and my guest today is Joyce Harvey, registered nurse, author of I'm Fine, I'm with the Angels, a children's book on dying and survival of the spirit or soul. The book can be purchased on www.xlibris, that's X-L-I-B-R-I-S, at at.com.
It's just www.exlibris.com.
Oh, just .com. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
No dot at the end of the com. Joyce is a member of the Screen Actors Guild and American Federation of TV and Radio Artists. Joyce's only child, Jennifer, died by suicide in 1995 while serving in the Marines. If you'd like to join our show with comments for me or Joyce, please call our toll-free number 1-866-369-3742 or email me at gchorsley@aol.com. Well, Joyce, when we took our break, we were talking about being hard on yourself, and you
yes.
made a comment that about the report card. Could you kind of repeat that? I thought it
sure.
was an excellent comment.
Sure. When Jennifer took her own life, I took that very personally. I felt I had failed in my role as a mother. I felt that Jennifer's suicide was my grade on my report card for being a mother, and I felt like I got an F, like I had failed. I couldn't see past the end of her life for a very long time to what I did do right while I was bringing her up. So I was very hard on myself. I took it very, very personally.
Mm-hmm. How did you move on beyond that?
It took a lot of
now, how many years has it been just for the audience?
Yes, it'll be 10 years this October.
Okay.
And I fortunately was surrounded by friends and family who often reiterated what a good mother I was and still am. You're still a good mom. And I think as I began to experience profound depression after losing Jennifer, I would ask myself questions like, well, you know how depressed you are, Joyce. Is this your mother's fault that you're this depressed? And I would say, no, it's because I lost Jennifer. That's why I'm depressed. Okay, so it's not your mother's fault. So is it possible that her depression and her suicide is not your fault? And I would say, okay, that makes sense. So I would really have to talk to myself and begin to just basically accept I'm not God. I couldn't prevent this. I didn't cause it. But it took a long time. It
mm-hmm.
took a long time.
And when you're saying long time, tell us a little bit about the journey.
Oh, several years before I could give up the guilt associated with suicide. And it's interesting, doing some research on suicide, evidence suggests that those who experience the death of a loved one by suicide are more likely to experience different, perhaps more complicated grief reactions than those whose loved ones died from natural cause or from accidents. And I also found an interesting article that said there were two studies which specifically addressed the grief of parents of accidental and suicide deaths, and it found that parents of suicide listed guilt as the most distressing aspect of their grief, while parents whose child died from accidents or illness listed loneliness as the most distressing symptom.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, when you say that about that it's even more difficult, I think, oh, my gosh, how could it be any worse? It is so awful.
It's
but
so
I hear
awful.
What you're saying. If we haven't had the experience, it's so hard, as you know, to people really can't get how hard it is to have a child die until they have it happen.
Yes, that's right.
They really can't get it. And I fully intellectually believe what you're saying, but emotionally I'm like, wow, how could it get any worse?
You know, it's interesting. There was a doctor, Vanderwall, in 1989 who did a systematic review of literature, and he concluded that evidence suggests bereavement following suicide is qualitatively different from other causes of death in six ways. He said those bereaved by suicide experienced a prolonged search for motives, more often deny the cause of death, deal with more feelings of rejection by the deceased, raise religious questions more often, conceal the cause of death more often, and, of course, have a fear of susceptibility to any hereditarily-based suicide ideation.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Those are great points. Well, could you talk a little bit? There were two things I'd like to talk about. One of them is the stigma,
mm-hmm.
and then I'd like to talk about the idea. What was that last comment you made, the last statement about suicide? Some people
worry that there's a genetic predisposition.
Yeah, because
that wasn't one of my concerns.
Yeah,
but the literature suggests that some
right.
do.
Because this was your only child.
This is my only child, yes.
Yeah, and you know, the idea that there is cluster suicide and that we're now a suicide family, and you know, and sometimes therapists promote that idea.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be careful now.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've had one child kill themselves, it could be in your family now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and my belief as a therapist has always been this: let's say we are not a suicide family now,
mm-hmm.
because it has happened in our family. Now we say it will never happen again,
mm-hmm.
and we go in that direction rather than saying we're now at risk.
Right.
Because I believe that if we don't keep it a secret, which is part of what I think it is great about your coming on the show. And we let our families know how much it's hurt, and we let our families know that it is not a good thing to do. It moves us in a direction that this is not an alternative.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of work with families on doing family histories and genograms with families who've had suicide in the family, and the families, one of their family motto has become, we are not a family who takes this option.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that's one way that you can go. Could you talk about the stigma a little bit?
Yes. What I found is if I was talking with strangers and they asked if I had any children, and I said I had one who died, and they pressed the issue, how did she die? Well, she took her own life. A couple of times people say, oh, was she hooked on drugs and alcohol? And, I mean, they automatically assumed, no, you know, she wasn't.
Right.
She didn't drink. She was part of youth to youth and was against drugs, against alcohol. And I found myself being put into a defensive posture. And for that reason, I tended to avoid offering, at least, how she died.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a complete stranger that, you know, you're not going to see again and it doesn't matter, I didn't necessarily go into it. I would say something, it was really difficult for me to talk about that, and I'd rather not.
Mm-hmm.
But I was amazed at that stigma. Oh, she must have been, you know, hooked on drugs or alcohol, and that really bothered me. It's interesting too that research shows that people who lose someone to suicide are perceived by society as more psychologically disturbed. In other words, the survivor, the person who's lost.
Mm-hmm.
That they're less likable, more blameworthy, more ashamed, more in need of mental health care, and more likely to remain sad and depressed longer. And the way they did this study was they did anecdotes of they wrote up the same kind of scenario with a parent who loses a child, but changed the manner of death, and found that people's reactions were different towards the parents who lost a child to suicide.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Well, I'll just say that my teenage son, when he was killed with his cousin, everyone wanted to believe that they were on drugs and alcohol, even the police, and they did autopsies, and we talked to the police after, and they were very surprised that they had, their blood was clear of any drugs or alcohol. They just hydroplaned and hit a bridge and the car blew up. But you know, I think that people do want to find a reason for the death,
mm-hmm.
because then it means that it won't happen to them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I think there's some of that that's a little bit universal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've heard it in other realms. But I think what's interesting about suicide is that it's magnified. I think we hear it more, and there are more kinds of comments. What are some other things that came up for you as far as the stigma went?
I think, again, sometimes parents seem to be blamed for kids that have gone awry, however that might be interpreted. And I think that even if others weren't thinking that I was somehow to blame, I was thinking that. You know what I'm saying? That, again, going back to that bad mother syndrome. But it's interesting, too, and you would know more about this, the DSM diagnostic manual talks about
the mental health manual.
Yeah, talks about possible scenarios that can lead to post-traumatic stress disorder, and they list the loss of a child as one.
Mm-hmm.
They also list suicide as one. So, you know, I got a double whammy there in terms of having a critical incident and having to work through that.
Right. And do you feel that, I assume that having her your only child,
is another
impacts your future.
Exactly. I lost not only her, but my future with grandchildren. I remember when that hit me. It didn't hit me initially that I lost my grandchildren as well. Jennifer was 19 and she wasn't married. But when it hit me I would never have grandchildren, I grieved and grieved and still grieve over that because that's something I really longed for. So, yeah, I you know, no one's grief is any worse than anyone else's, but I really feel like I got hit with a triple whammy. Not only did I lose a child, lost an only child, and it was to suicide. It's a big cross to bear.
So when we come back from break, I would like you to talk to the audience a little bit about how you take care of yourself, because you're up and running, and that's a pretty amazing thing after everything you've been through, and I know, you know, all the things you do, and maybe we can talk a little bit about some of the things that you're doing now.
Okay.
We're coming up from break now, and please stay tuned for more from Dr. Gloria and my guest, Joyce Harvey. Our topic today is Suicide Changes Heart. And we will be with you in a few minutes. If you'd like to join our show with comments for Joyce or me, please call our toll-free number 1-866-369-3742 or email me at gchorsley@aol.com.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs. I start to cough.
Did you know your child's asthma attacks can be triggered by things like shower curtains, a blanket, even a teddy bear?
I feel like I'm choking.
And there are many other things in your home and your child's classroom you may not know about. For the latest information, call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Help prevent your child's asthma attacks and avoid the emergency room. Call toll-free 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. That's 1-866-662-8822. Or visit www.noattacks.org.
I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
When you combine energy secrets from ancient China and the latest breakthroughs in medicinal science, you get Power Healing with Dr. Shah. Heard every Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Health and Wellness. Each week, Dr. Shah will bring you another step closer to the expanding world of body space medicine. You will quickly learn and appreciate how power healing is a perfect alternative to hospitals and expensive drugs. Take a step beyond modern medicine every Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time with Dr. Shah on Power Healing, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We now rejoin Dr. Gloria on Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffered the loss of a child.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. Our topic today is Suicide Changes Hearts. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria. My guest today is Joyce Harvey, registered nurse, author of I'm Fine, I'm with the Angels, a children's book. Joyce is a member of the Screen Actors Guild and the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. Joyce's only child, Jennifer, died by suicide in 1995 while serving in the Marines. If you would like to join our show with comments for me or Joyce Harvey, please call our toll-free number 1-866-369-3742 or email me at gchorsley@aol.com. Well, Joyce, I believe we have a call from Bob in California.
Okay.
Is Bob on?
Good morning, Gloria.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Good. Welcome to our show.
Thanks.
Did you have a comment or a thought for Joyce or I?
Well, you know, I know you, and I've done work with survivors of suicide with mm-hmm. Compassion Friends since 1988. And one of the comments is that, you know, the...
And your daughter, could you just say a little bit about your childhood suicide?
Yeah. Erin was 19, and she completed a suicide with alcohol and her antidepressant medication mixed in 1987. And it was, as everybody knows that's experienced this, or any loss of any child actually, is it's an incredibly painful and ongoing experience. It never goes away. It gets, you know, it gets better, but it never goes away. And so one of the things that I've done, and it really helps a lot, just like Joyce's book, I'm sure helped her. I started working with a group called Teen Line, which is a suicide prevention group out of Cedars-Sinai Hospital in Los Angeles. And we do outreach to schools and to school personnel, police, fire, first responders, a lot of work on recognizing and dealing with young people who are at risk of completing or attempting a suicide. And it has really helped me deal with what I've gone through as a parent.
Mm-hmm. And I think Joyce is doing something outreach too with TAPS, right, Joyce?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And what does that stand for?
The Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. It's a nonprofit organization for anyone who's lost a loved one in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And I was from June of 2003 to June of 2004, I was their director of peer support, and I worked with all the families of the casualties in Iraq, Afghanistan, and would work with them to match them with a peer mentor, someone who lost a child or a spouse or a sibling in a similar way, but who was further down the road, to help them to deal with their grief. And then I would hook them up with local bereavement support groups like Compassionate Friends or Widows or Widower.
Right. So Bob and you guys are doing things. This is a little further down the road, right?
That's right.
Then it would be for our people who are maybe a year or two out of grief.
Right. Yeah. I so encourage people to do their own healing work first and not to leap into something too fast. We have to do our own grief work before we can help someone else, and we owe that to ourselves. And as Bob said, it's not losing a child. We never get over it. The pain becomes more manageable. We learn to carry it with us and control it a little more, but in those first couple of years, it controls us. And so it's really important to do our grief work and to allow ourselves time to heal, regardless of what society says the time frame should be.
Yeah,
Bob, you got any thoughts about that, taking care of yourself, how you did it?
Well,
Bob?
I entered into Compassionate Friends about 5 months after my daughter died, and well, I think the first three meetings, I couldn't even say my name, but it really helped me to be involved with people that had a similar experience as far as losing a child. Now, you know, we all know that there are certain deaths that have a stigma attached to it, not necessarily a real stigma, but a stigma in people's minds. You know, what kind of parent could you have been if your child committed suicide, or if you backed over them in the driveway, or if they drowned while you're in the house? Those kind of deaths that are tragic are also, you know, stigmatized. So that's part of the healing process, and it was good to be around other people. And Joyce is absolutely right. The time frame that society or, quote, professionals put on this, present company accepted, Gloria, put on the healing process or the grieving process is just, you know, it's a personal thing. It's a very personal, individual thing, even in married couples.
Now, Bob, tell me something. Do you think that there's any difference between a guy and a woman in the grieving process or with this? Or did you feel any different expectations that you of you?
Well, I think society does. You know, you go back to work, you know, how's your wife doing? And they never ask you how you're doing, for one thing. But, and you know, one of the workshops that I do with Compassionate Friends is called For Women Only, which is explain to women the way men grieve and how they see women's grief. So yeah, there's obviously a big difference in
was there anything
process.
Specific to suicide that you felt? Joyce was talking about that she felt that she was a bad mother. I think mothers kind of take a hit, or in their own minds maybe.
Yeah. Well, you know, in every situation is different. In my situation, my daughter basically, from the time she was 12, lived with me and didn't speak to her mother.
So you were kind of the mom in the situation, or the primary caregiver, I call it. I think the primary caregiver is the one that takes,
right.
You know, feels
dad can't
a huge
kiss
hit.
And make it well.
Right.
You know, dad can't kiss it and make it well type thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a similar process. You feel inadequate, and you feel devastated in the sense that, you know, you should have been able to somehow make this mm-hmm. work and make it right, and that's just not logical, and it's not correct, but in your mind it is.
Oh, yes. I was a single parent, too. Jennifer's father and I divorced when she was only a couple months old, and I remember saying, you know, I never let her out of my sight when she was little. I always kept my eyes on her. If I couldn't keep my eyes on her, put her in a playpen or a crib, you know, so she'd be protected, and got her immunization shots and did everything I could to protect her. And then this happens, and I couldn't protect her from herself. I couldn't protect
right.
her from the military. And it's just, it was such a feeling of disempowerment. Just like a parent should be able to protect their own child.
Exactly. Well, and one of the things that happens that after a while, when you've dealt with this as long as we have, you learn that when young people, or anybody for that matter, takes their own life, they're trying to end their pain, and it's a very real pain, not physical.
That's right.
As we know it, but a very painful existence that they're in, and you know, they used to do things like drugs and alcohol to self-medicate, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
and they find
right.
they get to the point where they just feel that there's no end. Unfortunately, and especially in young people, they consider a permanent solution to a temporary problem,
mm-hmm.
and they don't see any light at the end of the tunnel.
Mm-hmm. I actually had a friend who did. A fellow colleague who did a study, his dissertation was on people who jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge, and about 8 people out of like 250 lived, and he interviewed them, and every single one of them was sorry on the way down. Is that
yeah.
right?
Yeah, my understanding from the young people that I've worked with that have made attempts and not been successful is that they're glad they're still here, and that they really. Part of them wanted to die, but they really, you know, didn't want to. And when it got right down to it, you know, they were hoping that they would be saved.
They want the pain to go away. That's what they want. They want
yeah.
the pain to go away.
Exactly.
Well, one of the things that I'm very interested in, and I talked a little bit about it in my introduction, is the fact how we treat families where there has been a suicide. It is just incredible the way we romp in on them. But we've got to run in, and I know you're involved with it, Bob, so you're probably sensitive to it. We've got to run in, and you too, Joyce, with TAPS. We've got to run in and do suicide prevention in that school so there's not a cluster suicide, but we don't even think about this family that we're running over.
Exactly. And well, one of the things that I really do a lot of work with, LAPD, LA School Police, Riverside County Sheriffs, and school resource officers, is the first responder aspect.
Mm-hmm.
They can, you know, as I tell them, the thing that they say at the time
mm-hmm.
can be, you know, comforting, and it'll be remembered But
or
if it's
it can
painful
be cruel.
And not handled well, it will mm-hmm. never be forgotten. It'll just mm-hmm. be an added part of the pain.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, just people, and people don't know how to deal with the death of a child to begin with, or the death of anybody, you know, they're not really trained for it. But at the same time, when it's a first responder situation mm-hmm. of suicide, it can be devastating if they mm-hmm. don't handle it well.
Right. That's right. Listen, Bob, thanks a lot for calling in on the show, and we're just about ready to come up on break, so take care of yourself down there in Southern California.
All right, and you guys keep up the good work, too.
Yeah, you too, Bob. Thanks for all the work you do.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So, yeah, that was interesting talking to Bob. What did you get from that? Anything different for you? Or?
Oh, I agree with him, and you were asking about taking care of ourselves. One of the best ways a bereaved parent can take care of themselves is to go to a support group, to be with others who truly understand the pain and the devastation and the overwhelming, all-encompassing grief. Going to a support group and hearing others feeling the same way normalizes our grief. We're having normal reactions to an abnormal situation. And I've never considered myself a group person. Prior to Jennifer's death, I would not have chosen a support group for anything because I'm so private. But when I could not find the understanding, even in my own family, and then spent time with bereaved parents, and they just nodded their heads at everything I said, or everything they said, I nodded my head. And don't get me wrong, my family loves me, would do anything for me, but they didn't understand the all-encompassing aspect of losing Jennifer and how I felt my life was over.
Okay, we're coming up on our final break, and one of the things Joyce and I said during break is one of the big messages we want to give you all out there is that we've made it, and so can you.
Mm-hmm.
So we're coming up on our final break. My guest is Joyce Harvey, and our topic is Suicide Changes Hearts. And Joyce, when we come back from break, if there's anything that you feel like that we haven't covered, let's do that.
Right.
I'm Gloria Horsley, and this is Healing the Grieving Heart.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Are you tired of being tired? Are you sick of sitting around while life passes you by? You can get back on track by tuning in to Voice America Health and Wellness every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time for Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look. Attracting Abundance is the program that empowers you to finally break through your limiting beliefs and blocks and shows you how to succeed in all areas of your life, from improved financial abundance, health and weight problems, as well as your relationships. Don't wait another week to be joyful. Listen to Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look this Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Women, do you feel that you're too old to be active, too old to be beautiful, too old to have fun, or too old to be fabulous? Well, if that's what you think, then there's good news for you. You're wrong. Tune in to Voice America every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Aging Outside the Box, Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell. Aging Outside the Box is a fabulous, fun program that gives you every reason to feel greater than you ever have. Host Shirley Mitchell and O.E. Cruiser Small will cover phenomenal topics such as women's issues, health, diet, exercise, nutrition, faith, travel, and many other concerns for women of all ages. Feel young, feel smart, and feel fabulous by tuning in to Aging Outside the Box. Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on VoiceAmerica.com.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We now rejoin Dr. Gloria on Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffered the loss of a child.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. Our topic today is Suicide Changes Hearts. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, and my guest today is Joyce Harvey, bereaved parent, registered nurse, and author of I'm Fine, I'm with the Angels, a child's book on dying and survival of the spirit and the soul. The book can be purchased on www.exlibris.com, right?
It's just www.exlibris.com.
Okay. Well, welcome back to the show. And Joyce, when we took a break, I was asking if there were other things that you wanted to cover, and I'm hearing that you want to talk to our audience a little bit about taking care of themselves and how you've done it.
Yes, yes. I truly believe that there's a part of us that knows what we need to do to heal and what makes us comfortable and what helps us to feel closer to our child. Those who have not lost a child may think it's strange or morbid to wear a piece of clothing of the child or jewelry, but there's nothing morbid or strange about that. Every bereaved parent does in some way wear something of their child or keep it close to them, and that's a way that we can remain close to our child. Keeping their belongings in their bedroom for maybe longer than what the non-grieving public understands. We're the only ones who can make those decisions. And I tell people, grieving parents, you know, if what you want to do is not illegal, immoral, or unethical, and if it doesn't hurt you or anyone else, then do it if it helps your healing journey.
No, I like that, yeah.
Yes, we need to trust that still quiet voice within us that directs us in our healing journey and tells us what, you know, what to do and what would feel better. One of the things that helps me a lot and helped me, especially those first 5, 6, 7, 8 years, is writing. I've always written to process. I've kept a journal my whole life. Whenever I needed to process anything significant, I would write about it. And so I spent a lot of time writing after Jennifer died. I've written a book about losing her, which isn't published yet, but I've also written stories that have been published in Chicken Soup for the Soul. One's in Chicken Soup for the Grieving Soul. It's called I Don't Want to Walk Without You, and it's about wearing Jennifer's military shoes on her birthday. She and I wore the exact same shoe size, so you talk about soulmates, S-O-L-E or S-O-U-L. Jenny and I were soulmates, and then I also had one published in Chicken Soup for the Unsinkable Soul. So writing is one of the ways that I worked with my grief. And I think another, too, in addition to trusting that inner knowing, is to, especially for the newly bereaved, is to take life one day at a time, or when you're very newly bereaved, take it 10 minutes at a time if you have to. Sometimes when we look at a future without our child and a future of experiencing that raw pain we feel those first couple of years, it becomes overwhelming, and we need to ask ourselves questions like, can I do this for another 10 minutes? Okay, I can do it for another 10 minutes. Bring it down to bite-sized chunks of coping. If I looked at my life too far down the road, it was overwhelming, and I didn't think I could do it, but I could back it down to doable chunks of time.
Mm-hmm. The one day at a time kind of thing?
Yes, exactly.
Or 1 minute at a time at times.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Make sure that you're eating, drinking, and sleeping.
Mm-hmm. And sleeping.
And maybe going for a walk around the block.
Absolutely. Grief is very, very exhausting. I read an article that said that 1 hour of grief, 1 hour of grief work, has the same physical equivalent on the body as 8 hours of hard physical labor. So one of the most important things we need to do when we're bereaved is to get rest, to sleep as much as we can, you know, obviously, and still be functional, and to do what we need to do to get good quality sleep, because grief is exhausting. We need to cut back on our commitments. I cannot do the same level of activity that I did before Jennifer died. So get rest.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a caller now. We've got a caller, Carol. Is Carol there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Carol. Welcome to our show with
Thank
Joyce Harvey
much.
And Gloria Horsley. And where are you from, Carol?
I'm from Florida, and I'm in Maine.
Great. You're calling from Maine. Nice up there, huh?
It is beautiful up here. And I'm calling basically because I wanted to tell you about a wonderful resource through Compassionate Friends that we have every Friday night. It's a chat
Carol,
room.
Carol, can I stop you for 1 second?
Sure.
Can you tell our audience a little bit about your child that died?
Sure, I can. My son, Keith, Lore, died in 1999. He just was very depressed, like your first speaker. Very, very similar situation. Job stress, a boss that basically didn't have a lot of communication with Keith, and Keith was expected to do an awful lot. And he started suffering with depression, and we had no understanding of his depression because we didn't know the signs of depression at the time.
Mm-hmm. So you're kind of the same things that happened to Jennifer.
Exactly, exactly. When I was listening to her story, I kept thinking it sounded so similar to Keith.
Mm-hmm. We're kind of short on time, so could you tell us a little bit about your resource? Yeah.
Yes, I would love to. It's every Friday night from 8 to 9, and that's Eastern Standard Time. And you can find out more about it by going to the Compassionate Friends website. And I can give you the address of the chat room, but it's very long, and I think some people might not be able to get it. Would you like me to give it to you?
Sure, you can give it. Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's www.compassionatefriends.org/capital-C-H-A-T/small-c-h-a-t_entrances.shtml. But I think it would be easier if you just went on www.
That is a long one, but some of our real computer savvy people, I'm sure, could pick that up quite quickly.
Yeah, and I just don't want to discourage anyone. It's very easy to get into the chat room.
So do you have any other question or comment for us before we close the show?
Yes, the only other thing I'd like to say to you, Gloria, is one of the comments that you made on previously was that you said that you had other families that were, if you talk to your family about suicide, then other members in your family wouldn't take their lives. But we have to remember that suicide is not a choice. Suicide is brought on because of depression.
Mm-hmm.
And so because you talk to your child about suicide, that doesn't mean you're going to prevent a suicide death.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is true. However, keeping it a secret is also an issue for a lot of
people. I agree with that. I don't think anyone should keep suicide an issue, but I think a lot of people think that suicide is a choice, and it is not a choice. It's brought on by depression or another mental illness of some sort.
Right.
And I just wanted to make sure that other people don't say that, you know, because my one child died by suicide, then it's my fault that my other child died by suicide. Because
I appreciate that comment. Well, thanks for calling in, Carol.
Okay.
And hopefully people will tune into your chat room, and we will be talking to you later.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Joyce, we're coming up in about 1 minute to ending the show. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about or say? I so appreciate you having you on the show. You are just a wonderful guest and have so much information.
Well, thank you. I just want to say to listeners who are bereaved parents that the pain does get more manageable. There will be a time when you'll laugh and smile again, even though I didn't believe that when people told me. You know, in those early years, you'll laugh and smile again. But happiness can come back into your life. It's come back into mine. And we can do this. We can do it together. As we always say, we need not walk alone. And I know you repeat that as well. So it can be done. We can go forward together.
Great. Thanks so much for being on the show. And it's time to close. And again, Joyce Harvey, thanks so much. You've been a great guest. And together we have tackled a difficult topic, discussing not only the stigma of death by suicide, but how you can go on, survive, and thrive, and do fantastic things. Joyce and I have done it, and so can you. Joyce Harvey, bereaved parent, registered nurse, author of I'm Fine, I'm with the Angels. Thank you again for being on the show.
You're welcome.
Please stay tuned again next week for Barbara Weisberg, licensed social worker, Mama Stacy, and bereaved grandparent of Alicia, who died in 1997. Barbara will discuss how grandparents, who are often disenfranchised grievers, can give and receive support, a show not to be missed. This show is archived on www.health.voiceamerica as well as www.thecompassionatefriends.com websites. This is Dr. Gloria Horsley. Please stay tuned next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific for more of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope, renewal, and support. Remember, you need not walk alone.
Thank you for joining us today on Healing the Grieving Heart. Join us again next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.